loud and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week. It's happening, and it's happening now. I'm Brian Becker. I'm joined in studio by Walter Smolarek, co-host, sitting in for John Kiriakou. The United States is under fire for its continued refusal to ratify the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. We're going to talk about that next. 70 years ago, more than 750,000 Palestinians were expelled from their homes in an act of ethnic cleansing to make way for the creation of the new state of Israel. What's happened to those Palestinian refugees? Next, we talk about Israeli forces raiding media outlets across the West Bank yesterday, shutting down 8 media outlets. And finally, we talk about the communication between Donald Trump and other U.S. presidents with the families of fallen soldiers and Marines killed in action. That's all starting now on Loud and Clear. But first, we turn to the United States and its refusal to sign the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. Former International Atomic Energy Agency head Hans Blix is the latest to criticize the United States government. We are joined from New Mexico by Greg Mello. He is the executive director of the Los Alamos Study Group. And we are joined from Arlington, Virginia by Kevin Camps. He is the radioactive waste watchdog at the advocacy organization Beyond Nuclear. Welcome back, Greg and Kevin.
Thank you. Happy to be there.
Thank you. Kevin Camps, let's start with you. Swedish diplomat Hans Blix, a former head of the IAEA, has criticized Washington for its failure to progress with the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty ratified by most of the world's countries. What's going on here? Why isn't the U.S. signing this thing?
Well, there's been a major roadblock in the United States Senate, unfortunately. President Clinton signed the treaty way back in the 1990s, and it hit a roadblock in the U.S. Senate. So unfortunately, through the George W. Bush years, the Barack Obama years, now into the Trump years, the U.S. Senate has still not seen fit to ratify the treaty. And a really unfortunate time period would have been in 2009-2010, where Obama was president, the Democrats controlled the U.S. Senate and the House, for that matter. But the Senate still did not ratify. They were busy trying to pass health care, Obamacare. So here we are, you know, 2 decades later.
Greg Mello, what's the connection? The Democrats were trying to pass the Affordable Care Act. They had, as Kevin said, complete control of all three branches of the U.S. government. A popular new president, a House of Representatives with a very, very large Democratic majority. Same with the Senate. I think there were 59 Democrats. They could have done whatever they wanted to do, and they apparently did whatever they wanted to do, which was not sign the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. One, why not? And two, explain what the treaty is and why it's important.
Yes. Well, it's not so easy to ratify a treaty. You need two-thirds. In other words, you need 67, and sometimes there are people sick, so you need a little margin. You really need practically 70 votes in the U.S. Senate to ratify a treaty. The last time that this was attempted, there wasn't even a majority, and so they really didn't have the votes. And however, complicating it is that there are some Democrats that you might say are part of the war party, increasing numbers of them. And whenever an arms control treaty comes into the Senate, the war party in both political parties wants to attach conditions, benefits to the arms contractors, to the nuclear weapons labs in this case, and the production plants, and they demand a very high ransom for ratifying any treaty. And so it's the ransom required for the CTBT signing was the resuscitation of the nuclear weapons establishment after its bad years after the end of the Cold War. And then the New START treaty, the ransom required was basically the modernization and replacement renewal of every single warhead and every single delivery system in the U.S. stockpile, along with the factories. So, in other words, they got everything led by Senator Kyle, the Republicans, which held that New START treaty hostage, got everything they possibly could have gotten by the end of 2010 to get that thing ratified. And the cost ends up being so high that it can completely obviate the original purpose of the treaty, which was thought to be a step, by some at least, toward nuclear disarmament. But if you're adding nuclear armament to get the treaty signed, then you can end up going one step forward, two steps back.
Talk about, Kevin, the test ban treaty. There was the 1963 test ban treaty, nuclear test ban treaty, that I believe banned atmospheric tests. And up until that time, there were atmospheric tests of hydrogen bombs, atomic bombs, all kinds of nuclear weapons. That was banned, or there was an agreement at least signed between the Soviet Union and the United States. I don't know who else was signer. But this comprehensive nuclear test ban treaty is a multilateral treaty that bans all nuclear explosions for both civilian and military purposes in all environments. And it was adopted by the UN General Assembly, as you mentioned, in the 1990s, in September 1996. So, does the United States Pentagon, the military machine, that entity which has control over the nuclear weapons, are they for this treaty or against it? In other words, do they want to still be able to keep carrying out nuclear explosions? Is that why, or part of the reason why, the U.S. isn't going ahead and signing it as a treaty? Of course, as a treaty, and according to the U.S. Constitution, it would then become the highest law of the land. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, like Greg said very articulately, there's a war party in the United States, and it has its clutches in the U.S. Senate. It certainly has its clutches in the Pentagon, by definition. There are elements of our government, elements of our military, that really like to have that option of nuclear weapons testing, unfortunately. And it's such a short list of countries. What is it, 8 countries that have refused to sign and ratify this treaty? It would be such a good thing to do. I should mention that even after that 1963 treaty you mentioned, the Atmospheric Test Ban Treaty, with underground testing, as at the Nevada test site from, you know, the early 60s until the early 90s, it turns out, we just found out from the National Security Archives a few years ago, that a lot of those underground tests leaked into the environment. Something like a third of the tests in the United States, a third of the tests in Russia, in the Soviet Union, a third of the tests, perhaps even in a place like China, were leaking through cracks and fissures and sometimes even intentional venting of the radioactive contamination. And all the countries helped the others keep it secret for fear that their domestic populations would then start asking questions about their own nuclear weapons testing. So the U.S. CIA, for example, helped keep the Soviet and Russian underground test leaks quiet so that Americans would not ask any questions here about our own.
That's an incredible story. And Greg, talk about, here we have the United States imposing sanctions, very strict sanctions, vis-a-vis the UN Security Council on the DPRK for its nuclear weapons tests. And DPRK obviously is on the road to getting a nuclear arsenal and the capacity, both because of its nuclear capacity and its missile technology capacity, to have weapons that would be able to hit primary U.S. targets, and they think, DPRK thinks that's a deterrent then to them being attacked. But the DPRK only probably has 6 nuclear weapons. We don't know the exact number, but it's a small number. The U.S. and Russia have thousands of nuclear weapons. What accounts for the double standard? The U.S. won't sign the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, but then sanctions North Korea for having nuclear weapons tests at the same time that the United States is carrying out war exercises that simulate the destruction of North Korea, and North Korea says are the pretext, at least, or the rationale for why it needs to carry out nuclear weapons tests. Sort of unpack that one.
Oh, boy. Well, Brian, you've pretty much done it. Of course, we're an exceptional people and an exceptional country, so automatically we don't have to have consistent standards. But I think Hans Blix said it quite well in this quote that was in RT. The Senate wants to keep a freedom of action for the United States, and not just the Senate. Keeping freedom of action is kind of what we're all about, because we think that constraints that apply to others just shouldn't apply to us. I should mention that the U.S. and Russia, especially, having conducted so many nuclear weapon tests and having devoted so many billions of dollars to development of nuclear weapons, have an enormous database and knowledge base about nuclear design. And this is now being supplemented with nuclear tests which don't involve a significant fission yield, but are nonetheless nuclear tests just the same. And they're taking place in Nevada and also in Novaya Zemlya and in the laboratories. So with combining the data from these tests, which are so-called subcritical tests, with computer models and very fast computers that are available to both countries, fast enough in Russia and plenty fast here too, it is possible to get a lot of data and do a lot of nuclear weapon design. So it's the situation is asymmetrical and hypocritical in that sense too.
Kevin Camps, we have about 3 minutes left. South Africa, after black majority rule was finally came to pass, South Africa got rid of its nuclear weapons. I think Ukraine also transferred nuclear weapons following the collapse or the implosion of the Soviet Union. But most countries that have nuclear weapons don't want to give up their nuclear weapons. They consider them to be part and parcel of what makes their country credible or have a deterrent or something. And yet the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty requires and has an affirmative obligation on nuclear powers to get rid of nuclear weapons as the quid pro quo for non-nuclear states not acquiring nuclear weapons. And here we have both the Obama administration and now Trump actually modernizing the U.S. nuclear arsenal, in other words, making it more battle-ready or usable. Is it possible that the war planners are actually now spinning out contingencies that use nuclear weapons in a war that one side or the other anticipates they could win? In other words, a winnable nuclear war?
Right. It's a $1 trillion nuclear modernization plan under first Obama and now under Trump. And they're dabbling with new designs, so to speak, new military applications, new military uses. It's very dangerous, very problematic, and you hit it on the nose that the United States and Russia and others' obligation under the Non-Proliferation Treaty is to abolish nuclear weapons with all deliberate speed. And I was very encouraged that the Nobel Peace Prize Committee chose the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons as the Peace Prize winner this year. It's very timely, to put it politely, and we're really in a race against time to try to abolish these weapons before they abolish us.
Yeah, Greg Mello, real quick, we have about just over a minute, maybe just a minute. Nuclear weapons were used in August 1945. There is a feeling, I think, that they will never be used again because it's been a long time. It's been 72 years since they were used, and people and society has a short memory. But it is a real nuclear danger.
Yes, it certainly is. And Kevin is exactly right. We are a little bit in a race against time. When the President Trump says that he could completely destroy North Korea, I forget the exact words, but...
Totally destroy North Korea. Those
were totally destroy, yes. Well, the implication is that this could be a nuclear attack. But whether Trump said it or not, it's implicit in U.S. war plans. In fact, there was a NATO nuclear attack exercise just recently, and it's implicit all the time. And I don't think that we can be the tiniest bit complacent that about a situation where miscalculation or accident or a president or a Russian leader who is not completely in command, either of themselves or of the people under them, starting something.
Complacency at our own peril. Sadly, we are out of time. We want to continue this discussion, and we will in a subsequent show. We've been joined from New Mexico by Greg Mello. He is the executive director of the Los Alamos Study Group. And from Arlington, Virginia by Kevin Camps. He is the radioactive waste watchdog at the advocacy organization Beyond Nuclear. You're listening to Loud and Clear. After a short break, we'll be right back.
loud and clear.